Why do we exist? Were we created with a purpose? Or are we just here by chance? What are we to believe about life, faith, and worldview? Welcome to The Universe Next Door, focusing on answers to the questions we all consider. The Universe Next Door is supported by the C.S. Lewis Society, Trinity College of Florida, and supported by gifts from listeners just like you. Discover more resources and continue the conversation at apologetics.org. And now, your host, the research professor of Bible and theology at Trinity College of Florida, author and speaker, Dr. Tom Woodward.
Welcome to The Universe Next Door, and thank you for joining us today. Before we get started, I wanted to remind you to check out apologetics.org. That is our website and the hub for apologetics. That's apologetics.org. And if you find yourself having any questions or comments, feel free to send us an email at information@apologetics.org, and a real human being will get back to you quickly. Now, we have a very special guest today, and this is somebody who will be with us pretty consistently over the next couple months, and that is Mike Burhau. How are you doing today, Mike? I'm doing pretty good. And to my understanding, you, not too long ago, started a position right here in the Tampa Bay area teaching. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I am teaching on the Bible faculty at Calvary Christian High School in Clearwater.
For those of you listening, Calvary is one of the bigger Christian schools around here. We, from our church, have a few students who attend that school, and it's a wonderful place. Actually, it's right down the road from where I'm talking right now. But how have you enjoyed getting involved in that? Like, just compare it. You said you moved from, what was it, South Dakota?
Yeah, so before moving down here, we moved from South Dakota last July, and definitely the weather. You can't beat the weather compared to South Dakota. In the below freezing 9 months out of the year, and coming down here to experience the Florida weather has been pretty incredible. It still feels like we're on vacation right now, so we love that. And the high school has been great. I've before coming here taught within the university system since 2012.
Wow.
And I can say that teaching junior high school students at this high school over this past year has definitely been my favorite teaching experience so far. The kids are really bright, and it's just been a pleasure to be able to work through theological issues with these kids and discuss some of the questions that they have. And it's been a great year, so I'm looking forward to a few more.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we just talked a few minutes ago before we started this program, but one of my students in my own youth group over here, I'm the youth pastor at Countryside Baptist, they are in one of your classes, Mike, and they are very prepared to talk about apologetics. So whatever you guys are doing over there, it's working very well.
Well, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's awesome. And could you tell us a little bit about your Christian testimony? Because obviously, you know, teaching and, as you said, working through theological issues with these students, that's a heavy calling, and it's something you really have to be committed to, and obviously you're involved to a degree in the world of apologetics. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your testimony?
Yeah, well, one of the reasons why I wanted to teach at the high school level is because when I was in high school, especially my junior year of high school, I would not have said I was a Christian back then. My junior year of high school, I didn't think about God. I didn't think about religion. I didn't think about church. It really wasn't until my senior year of high school that I went to a school that offered a philosophy class senior year. And that's where I really started to think about God. And it was in that class where I was introduced to an atheist philosopher, Bertrand Russell. And I didn't know the terminology at the time, but my senior year of high school, I probably would be best described as an agnostic during my senior year of high school. And that's really one of the reasons why I wanted to get into teaching high school, because I can think back on myself, the questions I was asking when I was in high school, and I would have loved to have someone who was a Christian who would have been there to be able to answer some of my questions. But but I remember being in this high school class, and we read an article, it was very short, by Bertrand Russell on how believing in God is sort of like believing in Santa Claus, It's something that you do when you're a kid, but when you get older, you should know better. Mm-hmm. If you start thinking about the evidence for believing in Santa Claus, it's really not that good. I mean, you set out milk and cookies, but really the only evidence that I had was that milk and cookies were gone the next morning.
Yeah.
And the older that you get, you realize, you know, maybe it was mom that was drinking the milk and eating the cookies. And so that was basically the idea that I had when I was in high school. It made a lot of sense to me that just like Santa Claus, there's no reason to believe in Santa Claus, so there's no reason to believe in God. And so at that time, I got interested in talking to my friends about God, but I found out that they were Christians, or at least several of them were. And so we would get in small discussions about whether there were good reasons to believe in God or not. And that's really where my journey began. I don't know how typical that is, but I started getting interested in talking about God from an atheist.
Oh, wow.
The summer after my senior year of high school, I had some friends of mine invite me to a Christian music festival. It was in Minnesota. It was called the Sunshine Music Festival. And I didn't know what Christian music was at the time. I just, for whatever reason, decided to go to this thing. And the last concert that I went to that evening that I was there was a group called the Newsboys. And while I was there, they shared the gospel. And I wasn't a believer in God at this time at all. I was still agnostic. But they invited everyone, after giving a presentation of the gospel, they invited anyone to bow their heads and pray to receive Christ if they had just become a Christian that evening. And I might have been one of the few that just kept my eyes open. I didn't want to close my eyes during the prayer. But they asked if anyone had prayed to receive Christ to raise their hand. And I saw hundreds of hands go up. And they asked, if you knew Jesus before coming to the concert, would you raise your hand? And then all of a sudden I heard thousands of people start to cheer. And this is the first time that I remember praying other than when I was maybe a little kid.
Wow.
And my prayer was, God, I don't think you exist. I think I'm just talking to myself right now. But if you're real, you're going to have to make me a believer. And after, you know, the concert was done, there were some Christians there at the concert that said, if you just became a Christian, go and start reading a Bible. And so that was the only instruction that I got. I didn't become a Christian at that point, but I still thought I should go and read a Bible. And at my house, we did have a Bible in our house, and I just opened. It was a kind of an old Catholic Bible, almost like a pulpit Bible. It was really big. And I opened up to the middle, and there was in one of the notes down below in the margins, there was a prayer by St. Augustine in this Bible that said, Lord, help me not to believe so that I might understand. Or is the other way around. Help me not to understand so that I might believe.
Mm-hmm.
Help me to believe first so that I might understand.
Wow.
And it was when I read that prayer that a lot of my thinking started to change. Because when I was having discussions with some of my Christian friends, one of the things that I would say to them frequently, I would tell them, I'm open to believing in God, but you have to give me evidence first, because this is what I was learning from Bertrand Russell. You have to give me evidence first, and then I'll start to believe. And I never considered the fact that maybe the belief comes first and the understanding comes next. And so all I can say at that moment is, God opened my eyes to at least believe in him, because I went from believing that God was like believing in Santa Claus to thinking, you know, there probably is a higher power that's in control. And so that was my first step to belief, was right before going into college that summer.
Wow, and now you mentioned, obviously, Bertrand Russell having an impact on you early. Probably not the impact he desired to have on you, but
exactly.
Were there any other, like, were there any other major philosophers, atheist philosophers, that you may have listened to or been impacted by early on? Because I think it was important that you mentioned a lot of these arguments are not what they look like at face value. For Santa Claus, for example, you pointed out that there really is no evidence for Santa Claus, so it's not, you can't just throw somebody's name in there and act as if it's the same as making an argument for God.
Right.
But were there any other atheist philosophers that you were influenced by early on?
No, there weren't any other philosophers at that point that I was influenced by. But one of the things that was difficult for me to overcome, even after I became a believer, was one of the things I got from Bertrand Russell that I had to later learn how to kind of deconstruct was he had this idea of the burden of proof, which in some cases is actually a really good idea, but it didn't work when it came to God. In this article that I read, he said the reason why believing in God is like believing in Santa Claus is because the person who makes a positive claim for some belief is the person who bears the burden of proof to demonstrate that it's actually true. Yeah. So, you know, there's more contemporary atheists today who will say that believing in God is like believing in the flying spaghetti monster. Or they'll actually use another analogy that Bertrand Russell had, that believing in God is like believing that there's a teapot orbiting around the moon. The moment that you start to say, I believe this thing, and that's a positive claim that you're saying that you believe in, Russell said you bear the burden of proof to demonstrate that it's true. And therefore, what he was saying, when it comes to his atheist position, he was really claiming that he's not making any positive claim about anything. He's just lacking belief in God. Just like people lack belief in Santa Claus or lack belief in anything else.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not making a claim, you have no burden to prove. And that was something that took me a while to figure out how to deconstruct that idea. And when I went to college, actually, I had so I didn't get introduced to any atheist philosophers other than him, but I did have two professors who were kind of the stereotypical atheist college professors. I don't know if you've seen the movie God's Not Dead.
Yeah, yeah, I have.
Sometimes people watch that and they say, well, that sounds kind of cheesy. Like, is that really how the professors are? Well, I had two of those professors that were kind of like the atheist professor in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they also had a huge impact, but not the impact that they were probably hoping. So one of them was an atheist biology professor who, in his anatomy class, I took anatomy with him, he would frequently critique the idea of intelligent design by pointing out something in the anatomy of the human body that was suboptimal. And he would say, if I was a designer, I wouldn't design it this way. And so I started to reach out to this professor because I wanted to learn more from him. I started just with emails. And a few times I would go to his classroom and talk with him, and he gave me some books on evolutionary biology. But the result of meeting with these professors was I found out that there were other students that were doing the same thing, other Christians who were doing the same thing.
Oh, wow.
And I became friends with those Christian students, and we ended up starting an apologetics ministry at the university I was going to, which was South Dakota State University at the time. So,
wow, that's pretty cool.
So it is interesting that there's the verse in Scripture that says what man means for evil, God means for good. And so I suppose whether it's Bertrand Russell or whether it's these two atheist professors, the outcome wasn't what they were maybe hoping for. But
yeah, it's really interesting how God uses things like that, where somebody intends to kind of lead you away from Christ, and it ends up just strengthening your faith and really kind of forcing you to dive deeper into things that you may have otherwise not have paid attention to. I've dealt with that a lot in my life, and I would say I had sort of a similar kind of story to you when I was in high school or that age period, where I would have considered myself, I guess, agnostic if I had an answer. And I think it's important that you pointed out the burden of proof kind of point, because Romans 1 really tells us that the burden of proof is on you if you say you don't believe, because you
exactly.
can just look around. And I mean, to assume everything came out of nowhere, I mean, that sounds like a belief to me. And it sounds like something that you would have to be able to verify or demonstrate in some way, shape, or form. Even in terms of evolutionary biology, it's like you can't just say it's true and say, well, we don't know how yet, but we will know how. I mean, that's called the God of the Gaps theory.
Right.
And so, you know, I think it's just so crucial to understand that burden of proof and to not be afraid to kind of ask questions to somebody who says, for example, God doesn't exist or the Bible's full of myths. You know, they're the one making a claim. So say, well, what do you mean the Bible's a myth? Like, what specifically?
Yeah. Right. Well, I like that you brought up that Romans passage, because that's actually where I had to wrestle through the most. I mean, there's this interview that Bertrand is a famous interview with Bertrand Russell, where the interviewer asks him, if you were to die today and you find out that you were wrong and that you're standing before the gates of heaven and God's standing there, and he asked you, why didn't you believe in me and why did you try to lead so many people away from me? What would you say? And Russell's famous response was, I would say to God, good sir, why did you go through such pains to hide yourself? And as I was reading Romans chapter 1, and the Apostle Paul is saying, what can be known about God is evident to them because God has clearly revealed it to them, I realized that there is no neutral territory. Either Bertrand Russell's right, and if he's right, he has to give good reasons for thinking that he's right, or the Apostle Paul is right. And the more that I started digging into apologetics, and really just the more that I started reflecting on my own experience in life, I learned pretty quickly that I think I always knew that God was there, but there was a period in my life where I was suppressing the truth in my own unrighteousness and my own sin. And that's a hard thing to confront, but there's no neutral territory. Either the scriptures are correct, or someone like Bertrand Russell is correct, and there's no middle ground.
Yeah, right. And just saying that you don't believe something, first of all, doesn't make it not true, but it also puts a responsibility on you, because if you're saying you don't believe one thing, you're not only rejecting that thing, but you're also embracing something else.
Exactly.
You're also believing something. Nobody's just empty of thoughts.
Yep.
So Bertrand Russell was probably, it sounds like, I mean, you've quoted him quite a bit, was probably one of the most influential atheist philosophers to you early on. What do you think it is that made you or maybe drew you toward philosophy specifically?
That's a good question. I mean, as long as I can remember, I was always asking why questions, even when I was a kid. So much so that I don't remember this specifically, but when I talked to some of my uncles or even my parents, they will remind me that they had to get me to stop asking so many questions when I was a kid, which now I can appreciate, because I have three kids myself, and our oldest is 8, and he asks questions constantly, and I want to do whatever I can to not discourage him to ask questions, but yet it can be exhausting to try to answer all the questions that they have.
Oh, yeah, especially when it's from one topic to the next.
Exactly, yeah. And so for me, as long as I can remember, I like doing that. And there was a period in school where I think I was maybe discouraged so much from adults in my life from asking so many questions that there was a time where I maybe just stopped. But when this philosophy class was offered at high school, for whatever reason, I was interested in it. And from the first day of class, it was an interesting and a frustrating class for me at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I like to have conversations about big ideas, but I still remember the first conversation we had in that high school philosophy class. Our teacher came into class first day, and we were all sitting at our desks. And the very first question was, how do you know that the desk in front of you is real? And there were maybe 2 students in the class who loved talking about that question, and I was not one of them. To me, that wasn't a profound question. It wasn't a fun question. The answer seemed so obvious, and I didn't get why we were even discussing it. I can touch the desk. I can see the desk. That's all I need. And it actually wasn't until halfway through that that semester, there was a movie, The Matrix, that came out. And it was watching that movie in the movie theater my senior year of high school where I understood the question. I mean, how do we know that we're not living in a dream world or living in an artificial world?
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, that type of question has always fascinated me. And today, as I think about that as a Christian, there is a real question that we should ask as Christians, like, what does it mean to say anything that we see right now is real? And the answer that a Christian would give is, everything is what it is because God speaks it into existence. We live in God's creation. We don't live in a purely materialistic, random cosmos, or it would really be a chaos. We live in God's orderly created world. And the way that we know that it's real is because we start with our faith commitment that the same God who created us in his image is the same God who created everything that we see. And so I've just really always loved those types of topics. And I would say for me, it's caused me to grow in my faith rather than leading me away from faith.
Yeah, I would agree. And I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with R.C. Sproul. I'm sure you know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
But it's funny, when he chose to do his degree in philosophy instead of something directly theologically related, people would say to him, well, the Bible says not to be led away by vain philosophies. And then he said, right. Well, how will I be led away by them if I don't know what they are? I'd prefer to know what they are.
That's good, and
I think it's important to recognize. Dr. Woodward often says that philosophy is everything. You can't escape it. It's kind of like the term theology. It sounds like this fancy term, but everyone's a theologian because everyone has an opinion about God. It's just whether your opinion is right or wrong.
Absolutely.
Or whether you have good or bad theology. And philosophy is really the same way. It's not something you can escape. But I'm trying to think of who it was. It was a European philosopher. Not exactly a unique role. That's not most of them. But I can't remember who it was, but basically one of his students asked him, how do I know that I exist? And he looked at him and he said, well, who should I suppose is asking the question?
Right, that's good, yeah.
And so it's kind of, of course, you can get a lot more deep into it, but some of these things are just self-refuting by common sense.
For sure, and I tell students that really all philosophy is thinking clearly and precisely about something. And so I'll ask my students the first day of class, how many of you have ever thought about anything? And students, I mean, they all raise their hand, and I say, congratulations, you're a philosopher.
Yeah.
Now there's two questions you have to answer. Are you a good philosopher? Are you a bad philosopher? And number two, is your philosophy rooted in the person and work of Christ? And so yeah, I completely agree with what R.C. Sproul would say there is, philosophy itself is not the enemy. It's philosophy that's based upon false ideas.
Well, Mike, we are just about out of time. Once again, this is Mike Burhau with us today, and he will be with us somewhat regularly into the near future. But, Mike, thank you so much for being here with us on The Universe Next Door.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening. Before you go, check out this quick sponsor from our friends at DNA and Beyond.
Welcome to the world of scientific discovery. I'm Jim Huta, and it's been my privilege to practice as a perinatal cardiologist for over 35 years, looking at the fetal heart as it develops in utero before the baby is born. We now know that the fetal heart development is controlled by DNA, but more importantly, there's a whole new code in a new area called epigenetics. Methyl tags, which are the signals or control molecules for the development of the fetal heart. Also, check out the dynamic colored DNA model. This is the only existing model that includes the DNA methylation molecules. You'll see methylation tags which attach to various portions of the DNA in order to control how it does its job. In our website, we hope to expose you to new advances in this area of epigenetics in our epigenetics section. Come and join us today at DNA and Beyond.
You've been listening to The Universe Next Door with Dr. Tom Woodward, sponsored by the C.S. Lewis Society and Trinity College of Florida, and supported through the gifts of listeners just like you. To gather resources, continue the conversation, and support The Universe Next Door with your financial gifts, go to apologetics.org. That's apologetics.org. And join us again next time as we continue to seek the truth about life, faith, and worldview in The Universe Next Door.